Welcome to the Homeschool Show for North Carolinians for Home Education. Our purpose and goal is to help you homeschool with confidence and joy. I'm your host, Matthew McDill, and we have again as our co-host, John Lewis. What's up, John?
Okay. I'm awesome. I'm blessed. I got a question for you. What's the difference between a hippo and a Zippo?
Oh, I remember this one, but you're going to have to tell me.
One is really heavy. The other is a little lighter.
A little lighter. That's right.
A little lighter. That's right. I love it. Today, we've got homeschool news. We're going to tell you about a study that's done on homeschool socialization and give you some information about the Thrive Homeschool Conference. We also have homeschool conversations. We're going to continue our conversation with Spencer and Debbie Mason about the history of homeschooling in North Carolina and the Homeschool Helps with Amanda, where Amanda is going to finish her series on homeschooling different age groups by giving tips on how to work with multiple ages.
All right. Sounds great. Okay. Kicking off with homeschool news. One of the most common questions of homeschooling from the beginning of this modern movement has been, what about socialization? Do we know for sure that homeschool kids are going to get enough interaction? Are they going to be ready socially to succeed as adults? And researcher Dr. Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute recently published a review of a study done on socialization. So we're going to check this out. Scholars Seaver and Pope addressed this question by studying the extracurricular activities during childhood and young adulthood of adults who were home educated, public schooled, and private schooled while growing up. So this is a comparative study to see during school and as young adults, what was their social life like in the different educational contexts. So here is what they concluded. Formerly homeschooled young adults reported significantly higher rates of the pro-social activities, volunteerism, and club participation, which supports the idea that formerly homeschooled young adults are well socialized. The finding that there is no difference in the rates of participation in scholastics, artistic, or sports activities based on schooling type suggests that young adults participate in these activities for reasons that are unrelated to their K-12 schooling type. So I want to explain that a little bit. The specific ways that homeschool students excelled were volunteerism and club participation. The other areas are the separate areas that they study are scholastic, artistic, and sports activities. There was no difference in those activities between the different school contexts, but there was in volunteerism and club participation. There were no main effects of schooling type on rate of participation in any category of activity during the K-12 years. So during school, there was no difference. They were all equally active. All children in this sample were equally active, regardless of schooling type. Only in young adulthood did the effect of schooling type emerge. They also held that their, quote, study supports the notion that homeschooling is a viable way of educating children, not only about academic material, but also about becoming an engaged member of society. Seaver and Pope's findings are consistent with the majority of other studies on the relatively positive social and emotional development of homeschooled students compared to others. So this great. I mean, we've already heard about studies like this that have been done academically, socially, in a lot of different ways. But this is just one more that fits into the overall trend that homeschool kids are being well socialized. I guess we could have guessed that, right, John?
Yeah. And I have said before, as a former public school teacher and as a homeschool parent of five, it's really interesting to me how we define socialization a lot of times. That somehow putting 30 kids that are the same age in the room with one adult for 13 years is going to equal maturity versus putting them with adults and people of various ages day after day to do life together. Right. I think that our definition of socialization is off. most of the time when people talk about that issue. So I'm happy to see studies like this. Yeah, we have the Thrive Conference coming up soon, May 23rd through 25th in Winston-Salem. If you have not checked that out, you need to do so and sign up now. We have a limited number of scholarships that are available, which allow free registration to the conference for qualifying single parents. The deadline to apply for that is March 31st. So you need to go to nche.com/thrive/registration to find out more. March 31st is also the deadline to apply for college scholarships, and you can go to nche.com/scholarships to find out more. And we're going to have these links in the show notes as well. And we have all kinds of workshops at the conference that are especially for parents of teens this year. And sometimes parents who've been homeschooling for a while, they think, well, I don't need to go to the conference anymore. I've kind of got this. It's old hat. But one reason it makes sense to continue to attend is that your children continue to enter into new phases of education and life. So like if you have teenagers, you might find some great information and encouragement, and you should consider coming to the Thrive Conference to hear some of the workshops that are offered. I'm going to read you a list of some of the teen workshops that are being offered by various folks, but we have homeschooling high school how-tos, delight-directed high school, you can graduate children to college, better FAFSA, the first step in the financial aid process. That's a really important one if you're looking at college for your kids. Teaching the trades, online instruction, how to succeed, powerful and profound, find students' voice through writing. And if you have struggling writers or there's lots of helpful information at the conference, vendors and such too, or if you're just looking for a way to teach writing, I don't know about you, Matthew, but my wife needs to handle the teaching of the writing, not me. Gifts, talents, and entrepreneurship. How do I reach my teens and young adults' heart? Raising lifelong learners. That's Matthew's going to be teaching that one. The value of extracurriculars. 10 essential topics for discipling your children. Matthew's teaching that one as well. Reflection of a homeschool graduate on college application process. That one sounds really interesting. And then last but not least, homeschooling from a homeschoolee's perspective. And that's going to be Amanda Ware's kids teaching that one. So that'll be really fun to hear the perspective of homeschool students.
That's right. And if you guys have enjoyed Homeschool Helps with Amanda, the very first title, Homeschool High School How-To's, is by Amanda. And these are all fantastic. You're not even going to be able to go to all these, but hopefully some of them will stick out and be especially helpful, right? So going into homeschool conversations, just want to wish everyone again, happy 40th anniversary to NCHE and to the homeschool movement in North Carolina. We're going to continue our conversation today with Spencer and Debbie Mason, longtime board members. They've been serving since the 80s. They were witnesses and participants of the very first years of homeschooling and of NCHE. So they're going to talk about what it was like to homeschool after the North Carolina Supreme Court case that ruled that homeschooling was constitutional and before the law was put into place, and how they fought the first attempts of people in North Carolina to put really restrictive types of regulations on home educators, and how NCHE fought that and how we got the bill that we're living with today. So let's check this out.
When we joined NCHE and we started getting the greenhouse report back then I just started, back then you had phone chains, not, there was the way you communicated. And so if they needed to get a message out, they would call a person who was the head of a tree, that person would call a few people, and those people would call a few people. And that's how we communicated. There was no email. But I just remember starting to meet these people and getting phone chains and greenhouses. And then we got to know them at the other people at church. Sandy and Walt moved about that time maybe, and they were already involved with NCHE. And so we got more involved. And then we came, I guess it was 87. Well, somewhere along that line, we had to sign up as a school. And there's a, when the Del Conte said you are a non-public school, like a private school, you are like that. You're just like that. Then we had to meet all those rules. And this was between Del Conte and a homeschool law. There was this time period where we were just non-public schools. And I had to have a physical, and then we had to have all the fire escape stuff, you know, where you had to have, we had to go buy a fire extinguisher because the fire department had to come out and approve.
Had to buy two fire extinguishers.
Yeah, and by this time, it had been a year or two after, so the health department said, we are not going into people's homes. Forget if they're a homeschool type non-public school, we're not doing that anymore in Charlotte.
And when we opened our home school, during that first year, we'd have somebody from the Division of Non-Public Education come and visit our home school, and they would actually not only look at our test scores, they would get our test scores, because the legislature, the General Assembly, wanted to know how we were doing as a home school. So we were hovering between 82 and 84 percentile every year they checked us. And at that time, the North Carolina public schools were also doing a nationally standardized achievement test. And they were 46 percentile, 48 percentile, 49 percentile is the highest percentile I could see, remember them getting during those years. And so by the 92-93 school year, they said, we don't want to see those test scores anymore. And Rod Helder, who was the director of DNPE, said, yeah, they were a little embarrassed by the homeschool scores, and so they didn't want to see it anymore. And then soon after that, North Carolina public schools don't even take nationally standard achievement scores, because we were vying with South Carolina and Mississippi for the lowest test scores in the state, in the United States, and they didn't like to be compared to other states as well. So, but every year we would have somebody from DNPE come and inspect our records. And one year, Rod Helder spent the night in our guest room. But right. Here's the thing. They always made an appointment.
Yes.
It wasn't a surprise visit. Mm-hmm. They always made an appointment. And so we were on really good terms with the Division of Non-Public Education for many years.
Then the public school system and the people that don't like homeschooling, they presented a bill that would have made it very difficult for homeschoolers. I remember at one point we had to be certified in everything we taught, and you definitely had to have a college education, and it was just, you had to get your curriculum approved. It went through various stages of this bill.
Right.
But NCHE, you know, this was rallying. This is where we really got involved, because we were fighting this in the legislature. NCHE organized the homeschoolers into inviting their legislators into their home to meet homeschoolers and to observe a homeschool. And if you didn't meet them in your home, you would go meet them, And so all over the state, these representatives were doing that.
We were able to stop the bill in the Senate, but in the House, the Education Committee in the House changed some of it, so that you didn't have to have certification for each subject, but you did still have to have a baccalaureate in order to be able to homeschool. You had to teach state curriculum. It wasn't state approved, it was state curriculum you had to teach. And you had to get permission from the local superintendent of the school district that you were in for each semester you wanted to teach. And so, we didn't like that at all. We tried to stop it. We didn't. It passed in the House. And it crossed over the very end of the long session, so it crossed over to the Senate. And we knew that when the Senate took it up in the short session in 1988, it would very likely pass unless we did something between the short session, the long session in 87 and the short session in 88. So we sent a series of four letters. The fourth letter we got to them was an invitation to visit a homeschool, and gave them a name of a homeschool person that would welcome them into their home schools. We had named volunteers all over the state that were going to welcome their representative and their senator into their home school. We had a senator that just happened to be the chairman of the Senate Education Committee that read all four of our letters, and he actually visited a home school in Weaverville, North Carolina, and he changed his mind, and he says, okay, what do you guys want? So by that time, Herman Logan was our president, and he had been our education or legislative vice president the year before when we were fighting all of this. And he said, okay, here's what we want. And he put together what we wanted in a bill. And the senator said, well, I'd like to get annual testing. And so that's why we're doing annual testing. No required test score, but he wanted to see how we were doing. So we agreed to that. Our bill plus testing every year was a whole lot better than what had been passed on to the Senate. So at the committee meeting, he actually introduced our substitute bill. It was adopted unanimously in the Education Committee, went to the floor, 2 a.m., a senator from Gastonia, who was very anti-homeschool, introduced that we had to have a high school diploma in order to homeschool.
We were in bed because we weren't in Raleigh. And I think I was pregnant with Meredith at the time, but probably sick. But we were in Charlotte. Herman Logan and I don't remember who else exactly.
Walt was there too.
Probably Walt. We were on the floor. They were there. And so we get a call.
And Susan Van Dyke was there.
Yeah, like at 2 o'clock in the morning about what had just happened. So I'll never forget that phone call.
Yeah,
the memories.
Yeah.
It's like they're still beating.
So. Yeah. And so it went back to the House. They got it, and they unanimously passed it, so it became law. Governor Martin signed it, so we had Part 3 of Article 39, which was the homeschool law, and that's what we've been living with since 1988.
So listening to Spencer and Debbie once again just makes me so grateful for the amazing amount of work and commitment and fight that those first homeschoolers had. And they were a small group at the time, and they just took this seriously. And we're just enjoying the freedoms that they worked so hard to establish. So we just give a big thank you to them. And another conclusion to that is that we not only are grateful, but that we are vigilant, and that we continue to keep a close watch on legislation and make sure that we are the ones who will fight to protect and keep what we have.
Absolutely. Throughout this whole series that the Homeschool Show has been doing, Matthew, I have been just amazed at the passion and the tenacity, the determination of these first pioneer families to fight for what we have today. We're very grateful to Spencer and Debbie and to all of those first families that fought so hard in North Carolina. Thank you very much.
Welcome to Homeschool Helps with Amanda. I'm Amanda Wares, Homeschool Helps Director with NCHE. So this is the last video in my series on homeschooling different age groups. So we started with preschool, we've gone all the way through high school, and now we're going to talk today about, well, what in the world do you do if you have multiple age groups at the same time? I have personal experience with this. At one point in my homeschool journey, I had a high school student, a middle school student, an elementary school student, and a preschool student all at the same time. And as you can see, I am not completely bald. I didn't pull all my hair out, and we made it through. But let me share with you some of my best tips, some things that I found to be really helpful when homeschooling multiple age groups at one time. The first tip that I have for you is to combine as much as possible. Combine subjects, meaning that there is no reason why in certain subjects such as like history, science, art, music, literature, why you can't just combine all your kids together at one time. And naturally, of course, the high school kid would get something different, perhaps, than the five-year-old from whatever that history reading or history project or history experience is for that day. But they will still take away from that lesson what they need to. So that's my first and best tip. Combine as much as possible. And there are a lot of curriculums out there that are written in the homeschool world that are written for this family style, kind of one room schoolhouse idea of learning. Some that I personally have experience with are My Father's World, Heart of Dakota, Biblioplan, and a newer one that I don't have personal experience with, but it looks really amazing, is Gather Round curriculum. So those are all written, and there's more. I just can't, off the top of my head, list them all. But those are written specifically for family-style learning. So while you may be reading the same book, the same lesson out of whatever book it is, then there might be some activities for the olders or the youngers that are more geared towards their developmental stage. So that's my first tip. My second tip is that you might consider having sort of, I used to call it my three-ring circus approach to homeschool. So how we would do things, this was early in our homeschool journey. My kids were much smaller. And what I would do is I would get the oldest one started on whatever she might be able to do independently, like maybe a math worksheet or spelling or something like that, something she could work on her own. And I would get her started, and then the middle one maybe could just play independently at that time. And then I would focus for a short period of time, maybe 15, 20 minutes on the little one. And we might do something fun, something that would fill her cup of that mommy attention. And we would do something, some activity, some learning thing, maybe not, maybe just play. Whatever it was, we would do just one-on-one, me and that child, for, it doesn't have to be long, 15, 20 minutes. But then they are so filled, they've had their mommy attention right for that moment, and they might be satisfied to go and play for a little while, instead of being mommy, 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 you know. I've experienced that as well. While I would go then and work with the next oldest one. If that was, at that time, it was a kindergarten age student. And so then I would work with them. The little one is off playing. The big one was doing their independent work. And I would focus on that middle one. And we would do maybe a phonics lesson or a little math activity, whatever it was that I needed to do one-on-one with just that child, then we would focus on that for a little while. And then that one, the middle one, would go off and play with the little. They would be doing whatever they were doing together. And then I could focus if there was something that I needed to do one-on-one with the big one. And after all the three-ring circus, the craziness, then we might come together as a group and have our read aloud or history reading, whatever we would do. We did a lot of reading. Whatever we would do that could be done all together, the art project, the science experiment, whatever it was that we could do all together. And so that's how I approached having multiple ages that I was trying to school all at the same time. So that three-ring circus approach and combine. Also, just a little tiny tip to throw in for you, something that we did a lot over the years, is take advantage of nap time. Seriously, people always say, oh, how do you homeschool with a toddler? How do you homeschool with a baby? Take advantage of nap time. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think that's all I've got for you. There's so much more, but in this limited amount of time, those are my best tips that I can give you for today. So I really hope this helps.
All right. Well, we want to thank you for joining us this week. We'd love to hear from you. So send your questions and your feedback to the homeschool show at nche.com. Please help others find this show by subscribing and rating and leaving a review on the podcast app you use and YouTube. And if you think this show will be helpful for others, please pass it along. Let them know about it. To learn how to subscribe to our show as a podcast and on YouTube, you can visit nche.com/the homeschool show.
That's right. Thanks for joining us. And until next week, continue to homeschool with confidence and joy.